I loved Christmas. And I mean, I loved Christmas. And as most kids do, I loved it because of the gift giving. In particular, the gift giving to me. Me and my sister both did. And every Christmas day was just this chaotic occasion as we would open up our gifts and just scream our heads off out of excitement. My grandparents, as they would come in, they would always tell their friends and they were always excited because they knew how much excitement we had on the day of opening up our gifts. But one year, it was a little bit different for whatever reason. I was 4 or 5, and I was opening a gift. And I remember that gift. It was a castle set with these action figures from medieval times. And I remember playing with that gift for many years to come. I loved it. But for whatever reason, in my 5-year-old self, I shouted out as I opened up the gift, "This is garbage." And yes, somewhere in a mess of VHS tapes, you can find that recording in my parents' basement. Have you ever received a gift you didn't really like for whatever reason? It just didn't connect with you. You didn't like it. And it's always awkward, that awkward moment where the person who gave you the gift is staring at you as you open up the gift. And you have to conjure up this fake excitement as you open up the gift. And you know the saying, you shouldn't have. And you're thinking that, no, you really shouldn't have. Right? You don't like the gift. But you have to pretend and say, oh, thank you. This is just what I wanted. And then you've got to repent later that week for lying. On the other side of that, have you ever given a gift where people, or where the person, you could tell very clearly as they open up that gift, they don't like your gift, but they are having that awkward moment of trying to show some excitement, right? That's incredibly awkward. I think it's worse to be the one giving the gift and someone not like it than it is to receive a gift and not to like it, right? It's just awkward. And I'll say this for the guys in the room. If she ever says this to you, you don't need to get me anything. It's a trap. And it's one I unfortunately have fallen prey to. In John chapter 8 and verse 12, Jesus says, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of light." You see, Jesus was given as a gift to this world. He was given as a gift of God's presence, right? The present that God gave to us was his presence, in which God became flesh and he dwelt among us. He became a human being and actually lived on this same earth that you and I walk on each day. And he came as a gift, and that gift is a gift to be celebrated, that the light of the world has come. Yet, and that's something that we saw last week. We saw people like Joseph and Mary, the parents of Jesus, but we also saw people like Simeon and Anna, that this was a gift that they celebrated. And many people celebrated. They rejoiced that the light had come into the world. But what we also see is that for some people, this was not a season of rejoicing. For you and me, it seems obvious. Jesus has come to the world. God became flesh, dwelt among us, died for our sins. That is a reason to rejoice. But for some people in the first century, it was not a season of rejoicing. The news about Jesus to them was not good news. It wasn't gospel. Instead, it was actually bad news. And we think, how could that be? How could the news about Jesus coming into the world actually be bad news? Well, one of those people who saw this as bad news is a guy named Herod. And as we think about King Herod, during the first century was a king because he was in the right time and the right place. He's a very interesting person. As he became king in the context of Israel kind of being in a mess, as we've looked at in several weeks. And Rome had come in to set order in Israel. And Herod's father was set up as sort of the advisor of the southern part of the kingdom. And then this Herod, King Herod, the one we call Herod the Great, he was set up as a governor of the Galilean area. But as Herod's father, Herod the Senior, passed away, this Herod, Herod the Great, was actually set up and appointed by Rome to be king of the Jews, which was unheard of, by the way, because Herod was not fully Jewish. His father was not a Jew. He was an Edomite. And so this was a big deal. And this was something that the Jews would not have liked. However, the Herods, in particular Herod the Great, that we're going to look at this morning for just a moment, he was really good at what he did. He was a really good king. Now, if you asked his subjects, those who lived under his kingship, they would not have agreed with that statement. But when we look at it from a king standpoint, he was a good king, and here's why. Herod was really good at staying king. He was really good at staying king. And the reason why was he and his father both had were really good at being loyal to the Romans. They were good at paying homage to the Romans, and that's who gave them their power. And they were really good, in particular Herod the Great. One of the reasons why he's called Herod the Great was because of his great building projects that he undertook in Jerusalem and in surrounding areas. He, in fact, is the one who's responsible for rebuilding the Temple of the Jews, although he didn't really do it in the way they probably would have done it, and so they weren't exactly grateful for it. But the point is, he was known for these great projects, these amphitheaters he would build, and he would name them after Roman officials. And any time Romans would come into his area, he'd meet them in a parade and give them gifts of gold. Herod was good at being king because he was good at staying king. And in fact, any time rivals, political rivals, arose, Herod knew what he needed to do. He took them out. And in fact, it's such a crazy story about the story of King Herod, is that he was such a good political survivalist that he would even eliminate his own family who rose up as political rivals. Herod is known for killing three of his own sons who he viewed as a threat, and including killing his favorite wife who, you know, he viewed as a threat. And in fact, one of the Roman emperors, Caesar Augustus, had a saying about Herod. He said, "I would rather be Herod's pig than to be one of his sons." And there's actually a play on words there in the original language. But the reason was, you would be more likely to survive in Herod's household if you were a pig than if you were his son. Because at least as a pig, you weren't a threat to his kingdom. And you know what happened if you rose up against Herod? He was very good at what he did. And if you got in his way, he took you out. And so this morning we look at a text in which a new threat had arisen to Herod's kingship and his kingdom. Here in Matthew chapter 2, it says, "And after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem." And Magi is kind of a weird word. Some of your translations will say these wise and learned men, or it might say these wise men, as we traditionally know them as. All right, as they come into what these Magi were is probably this kind of these priestly astrologers from the Gentile nations in the east came to them, and they apparently studied the stars, and they come and they ask, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him." Now, there's a lot we could say here about the star and the prophecy in Numbers. It talks about this, the star rising up out of Bethlehem, but or out of Judah. But let's just move on to get to the point here. Is they were in Jerusalem, these wise men from the east, these Gentiles, were in Jerusalem asking, "Where's the born King of the Jews?" If you do that, if Gentiles actually come into Jerusalem saying, "Where's the King of the Jews that has been born?" that's going to cause a lot of talk. And it did. And apparently, very quickly, the news got to King Herod that these Gentiles are here in our city, and they're asking, "Where's this newborn King of the Jews?" And that was, of course, disturbing to him. And that's what the passage says next in verse 3. It says, "And when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all of Jerusalem with him." Right? So Herod's political alarms are going off. Right? Not only is he disturbed, I think he's fearful. I think he's terrified. Why? Because although Herod was a king of the Jews, he wasn't a king from the Jews. And he knew at any point that a rightful claim could be made to the throne. And so he had a very fragile kingdom in that sense. And when he hears that this king has been born, and not only has he been born, but he's been born King of the Jews, In other words, that this whatever this prophecy was, it wasn't just that a king that one has come who one day will be king, but the prophecy was the king has been born. That was fundamentally who this child was. That he was king. And of course, Herod is disturbed by this, in terms of keeping his kingdom intact, rightly so. But what's interesting is it also says all of Jerusalem with him were disturbed. We can understand Herod being disturbed by this because his kingdom's at the... Well, why would all Jerusalem? Herod's not even a Jew. Why would he care? What is this to him? Herod's not a Jew. Of course, he's worried about this. Why would Jerusalem be concerned about this? Now, when it says Jerusalem, probably what it means is the leaders, the rulers and officials of Jerusalem. Now, just as Herod had tethered himself to Rome, these Jewish officials and these leaders had tethered themselves to Herod's power too, right? If all of their power was tied up in Herod's power. And they knew if Herod's taken out, that's a threat to our power too. So you would think that all Jerusalem would be rejoicing and the Jewish leaders would be rejoicing because if the Messiah is here, that means freedom for them, right? At least that's what they believed. But instead, you find them disturbed with Herod, the fact that this Messiah they had been waiting for is supposedly has come into the world. And it just shows you the corruptness that can take place in us as we try to hold on to our own kingdoms and hold on to our own power and our own authority. And you can see the corrupt state Israel had come into, Jerusalem had come into, the fact that they would actually be threatened and disturbed by the fact that the king they had been waiting for had finally come. But here's a truth, and here's what Herod knew, and here's what these leaders in Jerusalem knew, is that the news about Jesus threatens the power structures of this world. They knew that if this king, who they had learned about in the Old Testament, would set up a king that would destroy all other kingdoms, they knew that if this king had truly come into the world, that it was a death sentence on their own rule and reign and control and authority over the Jewish people. And so this was bad news. And so what Herod does is he does what he does best, is that he goes to protect his kingdom. And so he kind of creates this whole scenario with the wise men who had come from the east, the Magi. And he says, you go find this boy and you come back to me and I'll worship him too. Now, of course, that's not what was actually on Herod's mind. He was setting out to do what he did best, which was protecting his kingdom, surviving politically. And he would do what he does when a political rival comes onto the scene, just like he had done in his own family. And so the Magi do find Jesus. They worship him. They give him the gifts. But then Joseph, the stepfather of Jesus, has another dream. And it says, get up, he said. The angel says to him, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt and stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. He's going to search for the child to kill him. And that's exactly what Herod had intended to do. And so Joseph and Mary are able to flee with Jesus and keep him safe. But just sit with that for a moment, because it says Herod is going to search. Some translation says Herod is going to hunt, because that's exactly what Herod was doing here. Right? He felt exposed by the fact that this new king was coming into the world, and he wanted to knock out this threat early on before it became a viable threat. And so he was going to hunt down this child in order to kill him. Some translation, murder. But the translations that really get the word right is that he was setting out to destroy him. In other words, he wanted to stomp out this fire before it even got the chance to spread. We often think about that, right? Like, if we think about the evil people of the world, and if you could find them as a child, would you kill them in order to remove the threats that they are later on, right? That's the kind of thinking that Herod has going on in his mind, except for it's the opposite. Right, this rightful king who is supposed to rule and reign over the earth has come, and Herod sees it as an opportunity to take him out while he's young, before he's an actual threat to his kingdom. And so Joseph and Mary and Jesus are able to flee to Egypt, and the Magi, they or they clearly were in tune with the fact that Herod did not have the child's best interests at heart, and so the Magi do not return to him to tell him of their location. And this makes Herod mad. This makes him angry. It says in verse 16, it says, when Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. He was outraged, some translations say. And he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under. And as we read that story, and as that story was read to us in our scripture reading this morning, it's a painful story to read. As we expect this Christmas story where everything's perfect, where Christ comes into the world and people receive him, that's what we want to hear. That's what we expect to hear. When you say the Savior of the world has come, you expect it to be a beautiful story with a happy ending. But as that story progresses, it's actually much darker than that. As this murder takes place, this massacre takes place by this angry, furious king who is gripping onto his kingdom and trying to take what he believes is rightfully his, what he had worked for, what he had accomplished. And he would even go to the point of killing these babies, 2 year infants, 2 years old and younger, in order to just find the needle in the haystack, just to kill the one that he would risk that. But this is nothing new. This doesn't surprise us about Herod, because he'd kill before, and before he dies, he would kill again. That this was part of his nature. As this darkness inside of Herod is exposed by the news of the king, he begins to spiral out of control and to eliminate anyone who gets in his way. And we just ask, how could someone be so evil that the news of this king of peace would cause him to go around and to kill in order to avoid him coming to age? And really we walk away from this story as the story points to the fact that this was bad news for a lot of people, that Jesus was coming into the world. It was bad news for Herod, and it was bad news for his Jewish political followers. Is how could people view Jesus as bad news? So I want to look for a second at the bad news about Jesus. If you want to look with me for a moment at John chapter 3. As we look in John chapter 3, 19, 20, and 21, it says this. It says, this is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but people loved darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Right? The reality is people love darkness. In our modern progressive age, we like to think, in our secular age, we like to think that humanity is fundamentally good and that all of us have the best intentions in our heart and that all people are seeking to do good. But this story, history, and probably even your personal experience goes to tell us, and we believe this, I believe we know this in our bones, is that that's not true. Is that instead, as the Bible tells us, that people are actually fundamentally wicked and that we do wrong and that we seek our own agendas and that we live in this self-preservation, this self-protection and seeking the good of our own rather than the good of the world. Is that people really aren't fundamentally good. And we see this in people like Herod. And when we say, no, that's not me, we commit the same sin as Herod. We say, look at all the good that I have done. Look at all the good that I am doing. Right? And that's what Herod did. That's why he was called Herod the Great. And he believed he was great because of all that he had accomplished. Yet in reality, he was working in darkness. And Jesus shed light on that. And is true of so many of us and so many people today. But then the next verse points to the fact that people don't like to be exposed. In verse 20, it says, and everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. Now, Herod was just trying to protect his kingdom. But I have to guess that the all Jerusalem, the Jewish leaders, the religious elite, the officials of Jerusalem, they probably fell in this category, is that they realized if they lost their political power through Herod, ultimately their deeds, as they projected themselves to be these great religious people, would become exposed. And they feared that, and so they clung to what was stable to them, which was the power that Herod had through the Romans. As we think about light, light has really two different functions, right? Light can kind of show us the way. It can make the way known to us in front of us so that we can see, and allows us to see what's going on around us. But light also has the other function, is that light exposes the darkness, right? We think of light in the first way. The light makes our way known, right? We have headlights on our car, so in the darkness, we can see. And so we can drive safely. So light gives us the way. It reveals the way. But also light can expose. As we think about a thief breaking into someone's house and you shine a flashlight, or a light in front of the house might go on them, and that's going to cause them to either run away or they're really going to commit to what they're doing, right? Because they're exposed. Is light gives the way, but it can also expose. And this is the reality of the darkness, is that people love the darkness. They choose to walk away from the light because they don't want to be exposed by the light. That's why Jesus was bad news to the world, because when Jesus came into the world, that meant business was not as usual. It was a death sentence to their kingdoms, to their rule, to their autonomy. And it meant that they were being called to something else that they didn't like. And then in verse 21, it says this, "But the one who practices the truth comes to the light, so that it may be plainly evident that his deeds have been done in God." Ultimately, when you commit to following Jesus, when you commit your life to him, you're submitting to the light. You're walking into the light, allowing all things to be seen, and allowing God to do his transforming work in you. But that's not an easy thing, because we fear exposure. We fear our deeds coming to light and people knowing about it, which is the whole point of this passage, right? Herod was fearful of the deeds of his kingdom being taken away from him, of his wickedness being exposed and him losing his kingdom, and it causes him to spiral and to commit more murder and more travesty. Think about the religious elite who were so, and when Jesus came in the world, there was a threat of him exposing the works of darkness, their hypocrisy, the darkness that was involved in religiosity in the first century. We think about people like Judas, who was a close companion of Jesus in his life. Yet we know in the darkness, in the background, he was struggling with greed as he was taking from the collection of the disciples. And for fear of exposure, he ends up betraying Jesus and ultimately sending him off to the Romans and to trial. And you think about Jesus' accusers who came to him in the darkness of night, which was against the Jewish law, and arrested him with false accusations. Because the light exposes the darkness and it brings our wicked deeds. And just like in this first century where Jesus disrupted, he disturbed the power structures of that time, I believe that Jesus today continues, the light of Jesus continues to disrupt and to disturb the power structures in our own world as well. Jesus says, "The first will be last, the last shall be first." That's a radical idea, that we should prioritize the least among us and to promote servanthood, right, rather than rulership and conquering others. Right? All of those ideas are radical, and it's had a transformational effect on our culture and on the world. But let's step back for just a moment as we kind of wrap some of these thoughts together and ask this question. Is how can the world be so dark? Because if we look at this, as we look at the story of Herod, we look at the religious elite, we look at even this darkness among Jesus' own disciples that people were wrestling with and people were giving themselves to, and you say, how can the world be that dark? And that's evident, by the way, that the world is dark. You turn on the news, you scroll on social media, and you see just darkness. You see so much that is wrong with the world. And we ask, what are we to do? What are we to do about the darkness in the world? Because when we do so, we turn on the news, we look on social media, we think, you know, when is God going to bring judgment on this world? When is God going to bring justice and righteousness on those who are doing these works in darkness? And I would caution us to think about it like that. Because what we do when we turn on the news and we say, look how dark the world is, I guess we'll just wait for God to set it right. We look at our neighbors around us and we see people who do wrong. We look at people with different philosophies than us and we say, look at the wrong, look at the darkness. See, they're doing works in darkness. Ultimately, when we focus on those things, what it does is it kind of creates this us versus them mentality. In other words, while we in the church, we're the children of light, out there we see children of darkness, people being in darkness, fearful of exposure of their darkness. But here's what I want to point out to you, and I'll illustrate it with this story. There is a Christian philosopher by the name of G.K. Chesterton in the early 1900s. And in 1910, The Times, a magazine in the UK, had run a series of articles by eminent writers and philosophers of the day, and they asked, what is wrong with the world? That's what the whole series was explaining. What is wrong with the world? And I can imagine, I didn't see the magazine, but I can imagine, right, they're going through various topics, various things of their day, various wars that might have been going on, various issues that were being debated, and they were saying, that's what's wrong with the world. But then G.K. Chesterton, he writes in, and he says, dear sirs, and he's attempting to answer the question, what is wrong with the world? He says, dear sirs, I am. I am. If we're honest with ourselves, and in reality, the darkness in the world is here because of people like you and me. As in reality, we're not really all that different than people like Herod or people like the religious elite, people like Judas. It's because we have things that we struggle with in the darkness. And we have things before Christ that we were fearful of being exposed in the darkness. And maybe you have some of those things in your life today. And here's the reality is, yes, the light of Jesus exposes the darkness. But the thing that you and I have to reckon with is this, is that the light of Jesus exposes our darkness. And throughout history, the church has had to recognize that over and over again. And we need to continue to realize that today as we take this message from Herod, we take it from the religious elite, and we need to remember that we are just as susceptible to the darkness as people like Herod and people like the religious elite of that day. Even today, people and people who identify as Christ choose to live in the darkness of greed, the darkness of lust, the darkness of bitterness, the darkness of anger, the darkness of vengeance, the darkness of control. And although we think we are genuinely good and that we're fundamentally good, this is the same sin of Herod. He said, look at what I've accomplished. Look at what I've built. Look at what I've done. And he failed to realize the darkness that he was carrying out. The religious elite said, look at us on the outside. Yet, they feared the light. They feared Jesus coming in the world because they knew in their heart of hearts they too were living in darkness. And so we have a choice. We can take this path, this path of Herod, this path of the religious elite, and we can go forth and continue our works in darkness, but realize that we will be exposed, that that's a reality. As Jesus returns one day, he's coming to expose the works of the darkness, and all will be made known. Or we can take the path of coming to the light, becoming a follower of Jesus, choosing to embrace the exposure that comes from that, and living life in him, being honest about where we are, being honest about the propensities of our hearts towards darkness, and living life in him. And let me tell you this, is that coming to Jesus is not in this way, and coming to the light is not just a one-time deal. We don't just come to him and say, I've chosen the light, I've thrown the darkness out. But instead, we realize that we're always tempted to go back into those dark deeds. As history has shown us, as personal experiences, even within the church has shown us, is that darkness can creep in any one of us. We all know people who have come to the light, accepted the light, but have been overtaken by the darkness because they stopped walking in the light. And so this morning, here's my challenge to you, is that we need to recognize the areas of darkness in our lives that need to be exposed by Jesus. Because as followers of Jesus, we need to come time and time again to the cross, into his light, and allow our actions and allow our hearts to be exposed before him. And part of that is us being the church and us bearing one another's burdens and us calling each other out when we need to be called out. That's part of living in the community of Jesus, is calling each other into the light of Jesus and exposing our works, exposing our hearts so that we can be healed, that we can be saved. You see, the light of Jesus shouldn't be a threat. Although we all rule on our own kingdoms, we all have our own agendas, we all, in our hearts, have this propensity for seeking our own good and self-protection and self-preservation, right? We need to come before Jesus and allow Him to heal us, to rid us of those urges, rid us of those propensity. And regularly, we need to come before Jesus and be exposed. Now, will exposure be painful? Is being exposed by the light of Christ painful? Yes, and I can tell you from personal experience, it is. It hurts to realize that we're not the person we've projected ourselves to be. Or it hurts to realize that we're not as good as we might have thought we were. Right? This is exactly why Herod and the leaders of Jerusalem feared Jesus and wanted to put Him to death. And this is exactly why people did end up putting Him to death. Because being exposed by the light of God and the light of Jesus is painful. But just as you turn on the lights, as you've been sitting in a dark room and you know you turn on the lights and it's kind of like this painful thing as your eyes are not ready to take in that amount of light, right? Just as that's a painful moment. But what happens? Your eyes adjust and you begin to see more clearly and you see better than you did before. This is the way of the light of Jesus. At first, when you come into the light, it hurts. It's painful. There's some things to be dealt with, and that's an ongoing journey. But as we continue to come before the cross, we continue to walk into the light of Jesus and be exposed and deal with that pain, we begin to see clearer and clearer what God wants for us in this world. So instead of seeing Jesus as a threat to our rule and reign in our own lives, we need to see Him as the source of life, as the one who can give us what we actually want, which is true communion, peace, relationship with God. Instead of seeing people as obstacles or challenges to our own story, we need to view them as image bearers to be loved. And instead of seeing our own lives as to be something guarded, as something to be protected, as something to be preserved, we need to see it as a way to allow Christ to take over, to take the reins, and to allow His light to shine through us. A famous atheist by the name, the late famous atheist, Stephen Hawking, is quoted as saying this. He said that heaven or faith is a fairy tale for those who are afraid of the dark. And I would push back on that statement. Following Jesus is not for those who are afraid of the dark. Following Jesus is for those who love the light. If you're here this morning, you have a need. We don't have an invitation per se, but as we do sing this closing song, if you would like to come, you would like prayers of the congregation, maybe you would like to put on Christ in baptism today, to walk into the light. It's going to be painful, it's going to be hard, but it's worth it because we get to see God face to face. If you have any need, we'd invite you to